On this episode, we learn about buying investment real estate in retirement accounts. So we're going to dive into what entity structure is recommended for this type of transaction, a tax that often people don't know about, and how you can easily avoid it. And then at the end, we go into one of the biggest risks that could easily be overlooked that you need to plan ahead for with the team that you have in place. So as always, if this episode helps you or brings you value in any way, please do me a favor and share it with a friend. Thank you and enjoy the show. Welcome to Build Your Wealth Muscle, a podcast dedicated to helping fitness entrepreneurs build wealth by saving taxes and growing their money. Each episode will break down different strategies in the areas of business, tax, and retirement planning specifically for your coaching business. Disclaimer, the topics covered in this podcast are for educational purposes only. This is not advice for your specific situation. Please consult a qualified financial or tax professional before making any changes to your financial or tax situation. Now here's your host, certified financial planner and tax advisor, Pat Darby. Hey, what's going on, everybody? Good morning. Hope your week is going great. So I appreciate you stopping back for another episode of Build Your Wealth Muscle. So if you're new, welcome. There's two show formats. Obviously, today you click the link, you know this is a solo episode, and this allows us to go really deep on specific areas in the world of finance, taxes, cash flow planning for your business, and hopefully give you specific takeaways. The other type of episode is where we bring on a guest, and they could be a colleague of yours. They have a successful business. They talk about their challenges that they've overcome to get to their levels of success, as well as people that support the online business community. They could be sales, marketing, performance coaches, or they could, in similar to what I do, they might support you from a different area of tax, from legal perspective, insurance planning, whatever the case may be. Those are the two types of shows that we bring you. Today, obviously, is a solo where we're really going to talk about self-directing, specifically when it comes to the world of real estate. Now, I am not coming at this from the vantage point of a real estate investor. I'm coming at this or showing you the vantage point of how you can use a retirement vehicle with that asset class. So this is not going to be, you know, analyzing properties and performas, things like that. That's where I should actually bring on a real estate expert to talk about that side of the business. But this is how, especially as I'm recording this, this is end of June 2023, where interest rates are pretty high, relatively, not historically, but relatively. And so it's possible that if you're listening to this and you like real estate as an asset class, you might be having challenges trying to do your next deal for whatever reason, maybe because the high interest rate is not making the cash flow planning work the way you would like. And then what might be causing you frustration is you're sitting there looking at an IRA that you own that is sitting in either cash or the stock market or some other asset class, quote unquote, traditional asset class that you could utilize for real estate. And that's what this is really about today, is potentially, I'm just use hypothetical, let's say $250,000 sitting in a 401k or an IRA, whatever the case may be. And in your quote unquote personal life, because that's a good point. Like, I want to differentiate today when we're talking about retirement accounts versus your personal money, because from an IRS perspective, it's a very important distinction. So I'm going to try to use those terms when I say personal versus IRA. I'll try to stop throughout the episode and reiterate that, but try to remember that we're differentiating you, the individual, versus your retirement account, because from a tax and legal perspective, it's very different, even though you control all of it. So the high level of why I think this episode is valuable. One, I realize I haven't done a self-directing episode in almost 14 months. The last one was April of 2022. So again, episode 31, if you want another deep dive into this. But this one's going to be helping you figure out, if I've got this money in my retirement accounts and I'm trying to buy an investment property, how can I marry those two scenarios together so that you can do what you need to do with where interest rates currently are? So that hopefully paints a little bit of the picture of what self-directing is. So let me give a broader example for people who are listening saying, I still have no clue what self-directing is. It's when your retirement account sits at a financial custodian that allows you to invest in basically whatever you want. The misconception with self-directing is mostly driven by the large financial institutions on Wall Street. Because if you're unfamiliar with how they get paid, the vast majority of those companies get paid by the money they manage. So if you've got $1 million and you give it to one of the big guys, they're going to charge you on average like 1%. So now you walk in the door and say, hey, I hear I can use my IRA to buy an investment property, a real estate property for investment purposes. So I'm going to take that $1 million and do that. And they'll say, well, you can't do that. If they say it that way, what they're really saying is you can't do that here. The best analogy I've heard would be like walking into Taco Bell and asking for a hamburger, or walking into McDonald's and asking for tacos. So did I say Taco Bell first time? I think so. But basically what that means is you obviously can eat tacos or hamburgers, but not at McDonald's and not at Taco Bell respectively, because that's not what they do. And most of the big financial institutions, they just work with stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs, etc. So when they say you can't do it, they mean you can't do it here, because the IRS code allows for all of this. And quite frankly, what really drew my attention to this, since I used to work off of Wall Street, and I still manage money for my clients. So I am coming at this I try to be as completely objective as possible, because I am fully aware that a lot of my clients, and maybe you listening, you want to be able to invest in what you know best. Because at the end of the day, every investment has a risk. And again, let me step back. This is not investment advice. This is purely education. Speak with your tax and financial professional before you do any of this. But typically, people are going to get the best rate of return and the lowest amount of risk in what they know best. So you may know someone who is an expert in real estate. Maybe there's a specific type of real estate in a specific area, and they are an expert. If they're going up against someone who's making their first deal, the risk to them might be significantly lower than someone else who may not be as educated or informed or experienced. It's like that in all asset classes. Like, I don't know if you listen to, I love Alex Hormozi. He always talks about one of his, I think he had said on one of the more recent ones, like he's liquidated some of his other assets. And he's just focusing on business, because for him, growing a business is his highest skill set. And for him, the risk of doing that is low and the returns are high because he's got so much skills in that game. So conversely, if you know nothing about the stock market and you're trying to invest in the stock market and you're excellent at real estate, but you have these retirement accounts that you're being told you can't invest them that way, that's not the case. Legally, they can do so. So now let me talk about what they can't do, because they can do almost everything that you want them to do, except for three things. So they cannot invest in collectibles. So fine art, wine, collectible cars, things like that. They cannot do those. They cannot buy or invest in those. They cannot buy or invest in any life insurance products. And then finally, they cannot buy S-Corp stock. Now, that's more of a rule because of how S-Corps are situated. They can't take on the retirement account. But just so you know, like when we were talking about that, they can do real estate, notes, crypto, and businesses. So if you're listening and you're saying, well, I wanted to buy this particular business, but I think they're an S-Corp, that's not the end of the world, but they will have to revoke their S election, which is doable. So just keep that in mind. It's still doable if the business you want to buy is an S corp. There's just more accounting hoops to jump through, but you're still in the game. You just know you can't do the S corp, but you could buy into a partnership. So again, meet with tax professionals who can walk you through how to get that done properly. Tax professionals who know self-directing, I should say, because that's you have to marry these two together. The only three things collectibles, life insurance, S corps that self-directing cannot do. So why do I bring this up? I talk to people who hear about self-directing and the challenge you're going to run into. Let's say you have a very successful business that cash flows hundreds of thousands of dollars of profit to you that you're investing, let's say. If you want to put money into retirement vehicles, it can be very difficult because there's contribution limits for most of them or for all of them. So it's important to take this into consideration if you want to do something like this, because you have to be patient with the process. Because the one way to get money in is through your annual contributions. Again, there's limits on that. So for like the traditional IRAs, it's $6,500 right now, or the same with the Roths, solo 401ks, $66,000. Defined benefit plans, it's going to vary by age, but that could be anywhere between 80K to 250K or something like that. But those bigger numbers are for people who are much closer to retirement because those are age weighted. But if you're someone who's making multi six figures or seven figures and you identify a multi-million dollar investment property, those numbers I just threw out of you are nothing, because you're like, well, I can't put $1 million into my IRA, yet I'm making $1 million of profit that I could put into a bank account, essentially. So that would be your challenge. So like, that's why you want to think about, if you're going to do this, you have to have the patience to do it slowly. So you have to be patient with it. So if you're going to do this, there's really two ways. Like I said, the other way to do it, and I had this recently with a client, it put him in a situation that was a challenge because he identified a property he wants to buy, but he did not want to buy it with traditional dollars. He wanted to buy it with Roth dollars. And there's some reasons for that we're going to get into in a little bit. But if you're going to do that, then you're going to need to start doing Roth conversions. Now, as I'm recording this, the market's been on a bit of an uptick for the last few months. But when the market pulls back, that could be an opportunity to do Roth conversions, especially if you have plans down the road to buy an investment property through a Roth IRA. The reason is because, let's say that same example you have that I mentioned moments ago, that you have like $250,000 sitting in your traditional IRA, let's just say for simplicity purposes, and you identify a $250,000 property that you want to do this with. You may not want to do it with the traditional IRA, but let's say you said, all right, I'm going to do it with my Roth then. You don't necessarily want to convert $250,000 in 1 year, because depending on where you sit financially, you could not have been paying the max bracket, but completely max yourself out and cost a lot of extra tax dollars. Then if you would split it up, like in theory, if you're hearing this towards the end of 2023, you might do half in 2023. Then on January 1st or 2nd, you immediately do the other half. So at least you broke it into two tax years. The other way to look at it is, if you did do it right away, like if, as I'm recording this, it's almost July. If you did do it immediately, your tax bill on that isn't due till April. So at least you have some time. The challenge you're going to run into is if you hear this in November, December, you do the whole thing, you just triggered a massive tax liability that's due in just a few months. So that's something to keep in mind, because if you decide to do this from the Roth side, which I lean towards as a better strategy, because there's less complications that we'll get into in a few moments. Okay, so we've identified that this has a lot of upside, especially if you're listening to this. Again, don't fixate on real estate. That's what I'm going to talk about today, because episode 31 and 32, I talk about it from a different vantage point, when if you're actually buying a business, and I made it related to fitness. So if you're buying a fitness business, So this time I'm going to more focus on the asset class of real estate. So here's some things you cannot do when you're getting, when you're coming to the purchase. There's something called a prohibited transaction. And so there's certain things that, so we've identified you can buy real estate, but there's certain people that you can't do business with. And that's the important component, because you'll hear other people like shit on this and say, well, you can't do that. And you might think that's because it was related to real estate. For example, if you own a rental property personally, your IRA can't buy it and put it into the IRA. The big reason for all of that is because with these IRAs, you're not supposed to benefit. Like, you're not supposed to benefit while you're still working and things like that. So they don't want you to basically run a tax scam with yourself where you buy your own property, throw it in, you know, let's say you bought it for $100,000, it's now worth $300,000. You try to buy it from yourself for $100,000 and then you go and sell it inside of your Roth IRA, and the $200,000 gain, the IRS gets gypped out of. So they're trying to, they put all these rules in place so you can't kind of play a tax cheat strategy on them. So you can't buy your own property. And then think linearly. You cannot transact, like you can't buy your parents' home. You can't buy a kid's home and let your kids live in it. You can't live in your own property. So if you are buying or considering buying a vacation property in Destin, Florida, or Miami, or I almost said San Diego, but who the hell's moving to California right now? But if you can't buy a vacation property, rent it out all year, then you and your family spend a couple weeks there. You can't ever have personal use of these properties. So that's an important point again. So I'll say it a few more times in this episode. If you want to do this, please reach out to me, because there's a lot of things that you need to understand when you're doing this, because there's a million landmines. It's an awesome strategy. And again, it doesn't have to be real estate. You could buy crypto with it. You could buy businesses with it. But those little things that I just described are what are hard to keep track of if you're just doing this on the side and you have your full-time job. So the one caveat to that, again, you can't transact with yourself or your parents or your kids, but you can do deals with siblings. So kind of an interesting situation there, but siblings are not prohibited. So you guys can do a deal together. And just as a side note there, you can't, they call it the step doctrine rule. Forget the name of it. It's not important, but the IRS thought ahead of people trying to run scams. So you can't sell your property to your sibling and then buy it back from them and then be like, look, see, like it's allowed, my investment property is allowed to transact with my sibling and I'm allowed to transact with my sibling. They thought of that shit. So if they can connect the dots back to you like that, prohibited transaction, you're screwed. So here's some more things you really can't do as well. So I want to get all the negative shit out of the way. When you do this type of deal, if you're listening to this and you're super handy, this is going to be less appealing to you because you cannot do the repairs. It would be the same as you going there and spending time personally. Like, oh, I'm living there for a week because it's in Miami and it's great. And it's happened to be not rented this week. You can't go and do the repairs to save yourself money. You have to pay someone to do it. So if you're super handy, I'm not handy, so this doesn't bother me one bit. But if you're super handy, and typically when you buy investment properties, you save a lot of money by doing things yourself. Or if something breaks, you go and handle it for your tenant. Not anymore. You are restricted to administrative duties. So again, you can't do the repairs. You have to have construction people do it, or a handyman or a management team. But what you are allowed to do is, like I said, the administrative things. So if you are going to the property, making sure that everything's okay, doing the finances, all that, no problem. But again, you can't be at the house swinging a hammer. Can't do it. The other things you can't do are take write-offs. So like if you buy the property, I'm here in Vegas, so if I bought something in Miami, I can't fly to Miami to check on the property and write that off. Because then the business is benefiting me again, or the IRA is benefiting me again. And remember, that's the whole point. The IRS is saying no to this. So let's talk about the logistics. So it's not, and if you decide to do this, I highly recommend you set up a team of people who know how this works, because there's some little things that will be different for the professionals in your life. So for example, who holds the money? You don't liquidate your IRA to do this. You would have to move from wherever the money is. Let's say it's at one of the big guys, and I never want to say their names because I don't know how slander works for the most part. Like, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't want to say their name, because even though objectively they don't do these things, but just to be safe, the big financial institutions, if that's where your money is sitting. And I should say this one thing, because I'm at TD Ameritrade, which is about to be Schwab because they merged. They have a self-directed division. So that term could be misleading for people, because basically all that means is you sit and you can do whatever you want. But whatever you want is still limited to what TD Ameritrade has. And they only have stocks, bonds, mutual funds, etc. So in this scenario, you would move your IRA, because I have one of my Roth IRAs at a self-directed institution because I wanted to buy crypto. So I couldn't do that at Schwab or TD Ameritrade, which is about to be Schwab. So you have to move your IRA or your 401k or your Roth IRA to a custodian that allows this. So again, do not liquidate. So when you hear moving money, do not liquidate. Do not receive the funds and then try to maneuver with it. And the other recommendation is when there's something called, so let's say the way you typically manage real estate or any investment that could require a lot of checks to be written, that could be extremely expensive if you tried to, because you don't own these things. The money is sitting at a self-directed custodian that owns that investment property for you. So if you need to cut a check to a management company or to a construction team, whatever it was, you would have to go to that custodian and basically fill out all their paperwork. The same way at normal financial custodians, when you need to like send a check somewhere, like I have clients that send checks to charities depending on their age. So like, but there's like a whole form they have to fill out. And obviously that's a pain in the butt for everybody. So the way around that is you form what's called an IRA LLC. So it operates similar to a normal LLC. There's asset protection to it and all that good stuff. But it allows you, the investor, again, you don't own this property. On title sits the name of the IRA. So it'd essentially be like IRA company for the benefit of John Smith. So this IRA LLC would be owned by that IRA. And so then, as rental income comes in from the property, it would be pooling in that LLC. At which point, if a management company needs to get paid, a repairman needs to get paid, you're just cutting checks out of that bank account, just like you would do any other business bank account or business checking account. So that's logistically how you simplify the process, because you're not cutting checks here. So that's an important note. I think I had, I'll revisit this point, but I'll say it now because it's the last thing I wanted to bring up. You personally can't intervene in this property. So if there's a check that needs to be written and there's no money available in that checkbook IRA LLC, you're going to have a problem, big problem, because you cannot, if it requires $1,000 and your IRA has nothing, but you personally have $1,000, can't do it, because you're transacting and benefiting your account. So I'll revisit that because that's super important. So here's something to consider as you're older. So the demographic of this audience is much younger, but here's just something to consider. And again, that cautionary tale I was talking about before. The challenge you're going to run into, because in the beginning, when we're talking about self-directing in general, the main focal point is your rate of return. Like I said before, like using the scenario of like an Alex Hormozi, for him, buying a business is likely his highest ROI. For you, your highest ROI might be in real estate. So if you have money that's sitting in a stock account, savings account, whatever it is, and you're like, well, I'm getting 6 to 8% here in my stock market, and I consistently get 7 or 8%, or let's say 10 or 20% in my real estate investments, you would focus on where you can get the highest rate of return. And so that's why this is very appealing. Now, the challenge you run into, fast forward 30, 40 years, you hit what's called required minimum distributions, RMDs for short. So when you get older, the IRS basically says, okay, you had a great run with these retirement accounts where every year, every time you made money, we didn't tax you. It just kept rolling over, rolling over. But basically, by the time you're listening to this, it'll be 75 or more because they've advanced it. That I think it goes to 75 in 2025. But then you have to start liquidating your money. So that's super simple for anybody who's in the stock market because they tell you how much you owe. Everything's marked to the minute in terms of value, and then you just liquidate and send the IRS their money. When it's in real estate, that gets more complicated because that's not how it works. So you have to get a valuation, you have to pull it out, a percentage needs to be liquidated. It gets, I'll say cumbersome, but more so annoying because now you are the one responsible for providing that valuation and liquidating a certain percentage each year. So that's one of the reasons, especially for people that are older that are considering doing this, they want at times to consider doing it through the Roth IRA side because Roth IRAs don't have required minimum distributions because there's no taxes that the IRS gets anyway, so they don't give a shit. So you just hold it. Now, side note, when you die and give it to your beneficiaries, they do have required time periods that they have to start liquidating. They don't pay taxes, but they do have required, they have 10 years to make sure things fully liquidated. So the IRS does want that money back in circulation, but they're not going to pay taxes as they liquidate. In the traditional IRA side and 401ks, that's not the case. Okay, so that's just something to consider when you're sitting down with a tax advisor. And like it for myself, I say to people, would you want to go through, especially if you were not making that much money yet, we want to have the conversation, okay, got that $250,000, why don't we start rolling it into a Roth? Because we're saving future headaches. And again, if your business is in the earlier stages and you haven't maxed out your tax brackets yet, that's a very appealing conversation because you're prepaying future taxes and you're prepaying future headaches as you have to have these retirement portfolios valued to start doing this in your 70s. Okay, now, the last thing that we'll get into is leverage. The other misconception here is that you have to use cash. That's untrue. In the self-directing world, you can use debt on these investment properties. Now, it's not the way you would think. You have to go to a bank that specifically knows how self-directing works because you cannot, I'll keep saying it so that hopefully it drives the point. You can't personally be involved. You don't own this property. You're not buying it. Your IRA is. So you can't take out a regular traditional conventional loan because you're personally tied to that. You have to have what's called a non-recourse loan. So one of the perks is like your personal credit score is not involved here because you personally are not buying it. There's no personal guarantee. If this thing goes bad and you stop making payments, all they can do is come after the property. They can't come after you to keep paying. Because of that, there's two things that are going to be required. One, your interest rate is going to be a couple of points higher than a conventional loan. And two, you're going to have to put down 30 or 40%. Some place, I think they say it could be as high as 50. But mentally assume you're going to have to do 30 or 40%. Because again, they're taking the risk that all they can do is come after the property. But that's extremely good news because in that scenario we talked about before, you have $250,000 just sitting there. You don't have to buy a $250,000 property. you can leverage that money. So, but again, you have to work with a bank that specifically does these, that knows how to bring on the ownership from your IRA LLC, which is not a typical LLC. They have to know how all these pieces work together, because they have to know how to properly write the titles, how to properly make the loan agreement, leaving you personally out of it, leaving your social personally out of it. So those are the certain things that are important. Now, the one last thing, this is small, but it's important to know. I shouldn't say it's small, because it could, depending on how you're doing it, it could be important. There is a tax if you decide to use the Roth. Typically, you're going to hear these described as tax-free, which for the vast majority of time, they are. But when you use leverage in self-directed in IRAs, let's use Roth IRAs, because those are typically completely tax-free. The IRS basically says, okay, you had $250,000. You took a 50% loan and bought a $500,000 property. Now it's cash flowing. I'll just make it a simple number of $50,000 a year. They're going to say, well, half of that money is really the income from your leverage, and you didn't have that money. Like, so you never had that money. We never made money as you put that money in. We didn't get our tax dollars. So they have what's called UDFI, that is a tax on the profit portion of your leverage. So in that scenario, you used 50% leverage, 50% of that positive cash flow is going to be taxed with this UDFI. And then the remainder still drops into your, right back into your Roth IRA. So it's not that big of a deal, because you're only getting taxed on the part that was technically not your money. But that tax is not cheap. It's right now at the max federal rate of 37%. But again, we're not trying to say this is a tax scam. What we're saying is, if you've got money in a retirement vehicle and real estate is your jam, now you've learned a way that you can unlock that money. So just be aware that that exists. If you don't have any leverage on your property, oh, sorry, I left out the very important part. UDFI does not exist in the 401k world. So if you're buying this with a Roth IRA, you are going to get hit with, and you decide to leverage it, you're going to get hit with UDFI. If you buy it in a Roth solo 401k, UDFI is gone. So there's a lot of strategies there that if you're self-employed and you have a Roth IRA, you might want to start heavily contributing to a Roth 401k. Or if you're doing conversions, that you convert into like traditional dollars into your 401k. So that's something to keep in mind. All right. Now, the last point here is risk. Risk, risk, risk. We talked about before, you can't save the day for your IRA. So in that scenario, I've been using just for simplicity, like, okay, you have $250,000, you found a $250,000 property, you're off to the races. From a risk perspective, that's a horrible idea. Because like I said, if there's a cash crisis, maybe the roof collapses, who knows? Maybe your tenants leave and the place is ruined and no one wants to rent it for 6 months because you have to do X, Y, Z. You personally cannot save the day. You can't bring cash to the equation. Your IRA or the 401k, whoever owns it, the title of the IRA has to save the day. So you have to be very cautious with the cash you leave behind, because your cash is the only thing that can save the day here. So just keep that in mind. Now, this is going to complicate things, and that's why I'm leaving it for the very end. Partnerships. I'm trying to think how to put this so it's as little less confusing as possible. You can't transact with your IRA, but you can transact at the same time. So for example, if you've got $250,000 of cash and you have $250,000 in your IRA, you can buy, instead of saying 500, I'm going to say 400, because I want to emphasize the point that you want to keep those cash reserves. You could buy a $400,000 property with no leverage and go 50-50 with you personally and your IRA. But it's a one-time deal. Because once you're there, you can't change the ownership structure because that would be a violation. So why I use that example is like you might say, I don't want that UDFI. I don't want to pay that. And I've got all this cash just sitting here anyway in my personal checking account or savings account. And I got this money in the IRA. I'll go in together with myself 50-50. At the onset, yes, you can do it. But just be aware that the major problem with that is the cash call. If something happens and your IRA is completely tapped out, but you personally could fund it, you can't do it. Because if the partnership changes, because you say, well, I'll personally put up the money and the IRA won't, then you'd have to change the partnership structure. And you can't do that because you'd be changing the deal with yourself. And now you're screwing up the rules with prohibited transactions. So that last part, I don't expect you to have to memorize it because whoever you work with these hopefully will extremely emphasize that once you get in this world, you got to be cautious of your cash, like making fresh contributions when you get paid, not making distributions out of that account and into a new investment property because, God forbid, cash is needed. For the most part, getting a loan is going to be one of your biggest saviors, and they may not want to do it for whatever reason. So just be aware that it's not like other things where you get into a cash crunch and you get a line of credit or you sell your car or you get a friend to give you a bridge loan or a hard money loan or whatever. You can't do any of that here because even if someone said, oh shit, I hear you're in trouble. Here's $100,000. Pay me back when you can. You can't get that money to cross the threshold into your IRA. So just be super cautious of that. So as like a super high level, the whole point of today's show was to remind you that if real estate is your jam and maybe interest rates are high, so you'd rather not take out a loan and you have these cash reserves inside of retirement vehicles, you can stick with the game that you know. And this is the way to do it. Reach out to me if you have questions on this because there's a lot here. There's a lot of moving pieces where you need a realtor to know that knows the basics of this. You need a lender who's an expert in this. And obviously, you need a lawyer that can build one of these IRA LLCs that actually knows what they're talking about. Then you need these banks that know how to hold the IRA LLC. There's a lot of members of the team that you need that have to be experts in this because it's the little things that I described, like, you know, you can't write a check personally, like all these little things, they know it cold and you can easily, again, most of the stuff I described, like, hey, you go spend the weekend in your place in Miami, you make some repairs, you leave, and then Monday your new tenant comes in. That's innocent enough on your end, but you would completely violate the rules. So you want these members of the team in place, especially for your first couple. So as always, guys, hope this is helpful. Share it with a friend if you found value and have a great week. Thank you for joining us this week on Build Your Wealth Muscle. The links mentioned in this episode are available in the show notes. For video clips and more information on tax and retirement strategies for fitness entrepreneurs, please follow my Instagram at ThePatDarby. If you found value in this episode, please do us a favor and share with a friend. If you tag me, that'd be appreciated also. Lastly, for help implementing any of the topics discussed, please book a call. The link is also in the show notes. Thank you again for listening and have a great day.